Hemingway, Spock, Spear, Locus, Action, Very Weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's Wife, Klingons and the Afterlife, Boimler, Tendi's Dog, Ransom is very hard, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red, Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go!
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now, we talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now, we talk about the series,
well, good evening, Trekkies around the globe. It is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. It is 4:30 p.m. Pacific time, which makes it 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, which is where I'm at right now. Welcome to episode 586. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And before we go too far, I'd like to introduce you to my awesome Trekspurts. There's only three of us today, the three Musketeers, but we're going to forge ahead and we're going to give you a great show. I'd like to start off in Portland, as we usually do, where we have Paul the Toy Guy. How are you doing tonight, Paul?
Is that how I'm thought of? Is that my nom de plume? Is that how I'm forever identified, Jim? Is, I guess you just can't escape your identity, right? I'm doing good, man. I'm doing well. It's been a crazy week, as they seem to always be lately. But I'm feeling toy-tacular, man. I'm excited to dive in and talk about some of our favorite addictions tonight. So it should be a lot of fun, man. Should be good.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it myself. And now we're going to fly all the way out to Las Vegas, where we have our very own Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. Long week, just as Paul said, and been having internet issues, so doing my best.
Well, you want to hear something weird? We had over 2 feet of snow. Yes, you heard me right. Over 2 feet of snow on Saturday. I mean, it was awful. And then it snowed again on Sunday. We probably got another 6 or 8 inches on Sunday. Guess what's outside my window right now here in Vermont? Green grass. Green grass. And today is Thursday. So it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But crazy weather aside, guys, welcome to Trek Talking. You can find all your latest news, all of our latest podcasts, and links to our Facebook page at trektalking.com. Very easy to remember, trektalking.com. Go there and you can find a link to our Facebook page. Make sure you say hello. Make sure you tell us where you're listening from, because every week we do fan shout-outs where we say hello to awesome fans just like you guys. But in order to get a fan shout-out, you have to go to our Facebook page, look for the link at the top of the page, the Live Long and Prosper, saying, hey, dude, where are you listening from? And then drop us a line. Try to leave some emojis, because emojis catch my attention. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, then you want to tune in, because you're going to be immortalized as not only a Star Trek fan, but a fan of Trek Talking. And usually we start off with Eric, but Eric is enjoying his vacation. I believe he's in Italy right now, Paul?
He is in Rome right now as we speak.
Rome.
Though I know he has a very intense high security system of his at his house, so don't try anything, listeners. But, not that he wants you to tell his whole itinerary to the whole planet, but I think he's enjoying the antiquities of the cradle of civilization.
That's right. So he's not with us. He will be back next week, guys, so don't worry. So we're going to skip over Eric and go right to Charles. So take it away with our fan shout-outs, Charles.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Let's start off with a welcome to Angela Jane Cassini from Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome, Angela. Angela. Top fan Joan Landsberg from Yuma, Arizona. Hope you guys are getting some good weather down there. Another top fan, Vale Glitner from Texas. Welcome, Vale. And welcome, Amy Mirachek from right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. I don't know if you've been familiar with the USS Las Vegas. Come visit us. Dave's not here. Welcome, Mike Ketterberg from Michigan. Welcome, Victor Love from Virginia. I have family up in Northern Virginia. Welcome, Greg Peter from Gregley, Colorado. And also a warm welcome to James H. McCoy from Northwest Indiana. Paul, who's on your list?
Well, you know, here at Trek Talking, Charles, we like to make things an international affair whenever we can, because I'll tell you what, no matter what part of the franchise that you're fond of, there are folks who love it all over the globe. No matter what continent you may reside on, outside of these continental United States, there are Star Trek fans and fans who have been massively infused with enthusiasm for all the different shows. Let's prove this fact. Let's say hello to our good friend Benjamin Mackey from Melbourne, Australia, all the way down on the other half of the planet where all kinds of crazy things happen in Australia. You got to live large on a continent like that. Never have to prove your mettle in any other way. But great to hear from you, Benjamin, and thanks for being a fan. Moving over to Europe, let's say hello to our friend Nelly Bjork Nielsen in Odense, Denmark, flashing us that live long and prosper sign in addition to the flag of Denmark as well. So great to hear from you. And our next fan here, who knows, you could be waiting in line for an espresso right next to our regular host Eric tonight. Who knows? But I think Eric's a little bit further south from where you are, David. But we're saying hello to our friend David Pinavaria in Milan, Italy. Milano, of course, a little bit further up in the north than Rome. But it's great to hear from David. Flashing that same sign there, a bounteous trifecta of Italian flags. I need to follow Eric's example and get over there myself, because that's a country, if I go visiting to, I may never leave. And from my old family stomping grounds, where my people hail from, it's the United Kingdom, and we're saying hello to our friend Nina Crutchley in Lutterworth in the United Kingdom. Union Jack emblazoned on that identification there, Nina. So it is wonderful to hear from you. Thank you all for proving to us again that we are united as a planet by our fondness for Star Trek and our enthusiasm for a little Trek talking to spice up our week. Isn't that so, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Paul. And I want to say thank you and kapla to top fan Sharon Fleck, who's listening to us in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, the Brewers are supposed to take on the Mets today at Citi Field in New York, but it got rained out, and they're going to play tomorrow. So let's go, Mets, and thank you for listening to Sharon Fleck. We also want to say thank you to Albert Worley Boise, who's listening to us in Peoria, Arizona. Thank you so much, Alfred. We want to send out a hearty live long and prosper to Kathleen Gila, who's listening to us in the great state of New Jersey. And last, but definitely not least, we want to say kapla to Wayne Boyer, who's listening to us in Ohio, in the great old U.S. of A. And that, my friends, finishes up our fan shout-outs. Again, if you'd like to be featured on a fan shout-out, head over to trektalking.com and click on the Facebook link, or you can visit us on Facebook at Trek Talking Podcast. All right, guys. So that finishes up our fan shout-outs, and now it's time to get to our meat and potatoes of today's podcast. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. So if you'd like to call now, you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking, because we have a great show planned for you guys tonight. If you grew up, as most of us, my co-hosts, did in the 70s, playing with all kinds of great, great toys, chances are, if you're like me, you played with Batman and the Riddler and Robin, maybe Captain America, or in my case, my favorites that I remember most were Planet of the Apes with the little village and the little cage for the astronauts. That was kind of my jam, was Planet of the Apes. And if you do have those memories, you're definitely going to want to call because we have Paul Dr. Meagle Clark with us right now on the phone to talk about these awesome figures and what's going on with the company, what he does for Meagle, and we'd love to have you call. So 646-668-2433 is our phone number. Don't be afraid. We don't bite to give us a call, and we'll get you on the line. So without any further ado, I'd like to say welcome to the podcast, Paul, and how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I just, I wanted to talk a little bit about, before we get to the, I know this is Trek talking, but before we get to the Star Trek stuff, let's talk a little bit about some of the classic stuff, like the Planet of the Apes, the superhero
yes.
line, the stuff that I grew up playing with when I was, you know, much younger than I currently am today, and how that came about. How you got involved with it?
Well, like most of us, I got into Meagle as a 7-year-old when I went to a store and saw a Batman and Robin, both for removable masks, and my brother and I always watched Batman on TV. That was the first time I ever saw a toy of Batman and Robin. So we begged my mother to get us the you know, my brother always was Robin. I was always Batman. When we played with a cardboard box at the Batmobile.
Yeah, the same with me. I used
so
to run home from school, turn on the TV, watch Batman, and then I saw the figures at the store, and it was like a dream come true for me as a kid. I could actually play Batman and Robin. I think there was even a Riddler. I seem to remember. Was there a Riddler, or was it the Joker? I don't remember exactly. But at any rate, Batman and Robin were the thing, and then of course we have Planet of the Apes, and that was my big jam was Planet of the Apes. I thought the apes looked so good, and they had the posable hands, and they had the little cage, the little village that you could. Set up, and I loved Planet of the Apes. And that, of course, not only was it a TV show, but in the 70s, that was also 5 movies and a TV show. So, I think we lost. Guys, we lost Paul. We don't have Paul anymore.
Oops.
He is
Oops.
Gone.
Call him back, Uncle Jim. Call him back.
I'm using the force. I'm trying to get a hold of him right now. I'm trying. Let me see if I can get him back. There he is. I got him back.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes, you
got
to use the force.
I it just
no
dropped
problem.
The call. You know.
No, it happens.
Anyway, so you heard me say I had Batman and Robin.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I also got, Superman, because he was on the side of the box.
And I think they had, did they have Captain America, too?
Captain America came out in 1973 with Spider-Man.
With Spider-Man,
so the first
yes.
four were Superman, Batman, Robin, and Aquaman.
Yes, I remember. And what about the Planet of the Apes?
Planet of the Apes came out in 1974, and it was the first 5 were Cornelius, the Soldier Ape, Vera, Dr. Zaius, and the generic astronaut, because they could not get...
Didn't they make, I seem to remember a place that, like an ape city with a little cage that you could put the astronaut into?
Well, what they did was they took... Meagle had a line called Action Jackson in 1972, and they gave Action Jackson a jungle treehouse to hunt big game. And that became the Planet of the Apes treehouse with almost no change to it.
I did not know that.
Yes, the cage was actually for Action Jackson to hold the great ape that he captured. But it was perfectly fine for the astronaut.
It worked fine for me as a kid growing up. I enjoyed it thoroughly. For sure.
Planet of the Apes was a very successful line for Mego. They did $20 million worth of sales in 2 years.
Well, I was part of that. I can tell you that.
In $70, that's massive. That's a massive windfall.
That's
why
you find them all over the place, and even today.
Yeah, because they were so cool. I would love to have one of my old Planet of the Apes figures. They were so cool back then, for sure.
They absolutely.
But they kind of, I remember.
And then Star Trek.
Yes, Star Trek. I was going to say, I remember seeing Star Trek. I was watching the animated series at the time on Saturday morning. And I remember going into the store, and I don't remember if it was Spock or McCoy, but one of the first figures I saw was in a blue uniform. It might have been McCoy. And I was like, Star Trek?
Well.
And then, of course, I was hooked from that point on, and I put my Planet of the Apes aside, and I went to Star Trek. And I remember the transporter room. You could put them in there. You could spin it around, and they would disappear. That was the coolest
part
thing.
Of the Enterprise playset.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Mego then used that transporter for Wizard of Oz, for the superheroes. They found any excuse to use that transporter.
Wow. But I remember it. I remember it so well, the Enterprise playset and the transporter. It became my favorite toy when I was growing up. Was Star Wars, Star Trek, Bridge Set, and the Transporter.
1975, Star Trek came out. And Mego put out Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and a Klingon. And the Klingon definitely looks like the animated series. My boy Marty Abrams swears up and down he knew nothing about the animated series when he was doing Star Trek. But it looks very, the figures look a lot closer to the animated series than they did the original show.
Now, I remember going to conventions in the early days, and there were some aliens that didn't really look much like the aliens from Star Trek. There was a Gorn and a Mugatu, and there were some other aliens that didn't.
Yeah.
Look like yeah.
1976, Mego put out the first line of aliens, Star Trek aliens. It was the Gorn, but he was brown in a Klingon outfit with a Planet of the Apes body. The Charon, which of course was black on one side, white on the other side, but only once. And he didn't look like Bail or Lokai. And they put out the Neptunian, which was not actually ever in Star Trek. Mego just came up with that on their own and said, yeah, he's like a fish man in space. And for years, the animated series, the shows, anything to try to find a connection to the Neptunian. And it never existed.
And the Mugatu.
In the first set was not Mugatu. He was actually in the second set. He's a very rare figure. Because, you know, the second set of aliens was the Ian, the Talosian, the Mugatu, and the Romulan. And they are the hardest to find figures. They go for $1,000 each. In the box.
Wow.
Wow, that's great. That's great.
So, I can't believe I can't remember who the other guy was. But anyway.
So what did they do? They just used existing pieces from other figures that they had already produced and just mixed and matched them and called them a Gorn or a Mugatu or whatever?
Well, not exactly, but back in those days, it was just a lawyer that made the deal with the licensee and got a check up front, you know, and then it was a royalty. So it was up to the manufacturers to really kind of do whatever they wanted. They would most of the time get black and white stills from the show. So, and, you know, they didn't have DVDs, so it was up to the Mego designers to kind of catch an episode on TV. And if they had a black and white TV, they probably looked at the Gorn and said, he may be brown. He's gray on my TV. You know, so they looked at the Lizard from Spider-Man and said, that looks like the same face. So they end up making the Lizard into the Gorn.
Interesting.
And the Mugatu was a furry ape. And the Mego designers probably said, well, that looks boring. So let's put him in a costume. Let's give him a space costume. And we'll put white fringe on his hand, on the end of his shirt, to look like fur. Definitely was you know, taking a lot of artistic license.
Well, you got to have liberties every now and then, right? You know, because what if Mugatu's got to go shopping every now and then? He's got to take his spaceship. He's got to go someplace. So he's got to have an outfit. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to.
I'm going to turn
you loose on my very own toy guy, Paul.
Oh, God.
He's our toy expert.
You can call me Dr. Mego.
Dr. Mego, it is a pleasure, brother.
Talking about toys, they're not going to get along.
We're going to get along just fine, man. It's a pleasure to meet you, brother, and we'll try to avoid the Paul confusion as much as possible, but I'll just say Doc as I go through here, if that works for you.
Yeah,
man. But
that's what they call me at the office.
That's perfect. So, because Mego goes all the way back to, I want to say, like 1954 or 1955, right? And
Yes, exactly. That was Marty's dad doing little tin toys.
Wow. Wow. Is it the same family that still owns Mego today?
It is. The man I work for is Marty Abrams, who owned it in the 70s.
God, that's great. That's a lot of history, man.
David Abrams started the company. Marty has been a salesman since he was 16.
Wow. Is he himself a big toy guy, would you say? Does he have that just – you've got the feel he's got it, right?
Bring in – new pieces from Japan at that time, and Marty would go over it and make comments and changes, and, you know, he would take it out and go on sales calls. You know, at 16, he became a salesman because he didn't want to sweep the warehouse because it had rats. So he learned to sell. And now he's 81, and he is still as sharp as ever. He's got every number in his head. He knows what he paid for the thing from the 70s. He knows what he sold it for. He remembers every detail.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. So I'm really curious to find out more, Doc, because you're obviously from childhood like a lot of us, right? You grew up with like the the Woolworths catalog, the Sears wish book. You saw the stuff advertised leading up to the holiday season.
My sister worked at JCPenney.
My mother would
give us the JCPenney Christmas catalog and say $5.
Ah, that's pretty great, man, for back in the day. That's so great.
And go, I want the Enterprise, I want Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, Klingon. And I said, can I have a hurrah? And she said, no, you'll take her clothes off.
You know, what are you going to do, man? It's a, you know, curious age for all of us, of course, a curious era.
I could never get in a hurrah. God forbid I ever see her flapping breath.
You could be scarred for life, Doc. You could be scarred for life.
Right,
so tell us the story, though, man.
Porno pervert.
Tell us how it worked, though, man, from being an obviously massive, deep into it fan in your childhood and growing up. How did it come that you ended up being a fixture of Miko in the company where you now work for Marty and these guys? How did that journey go? Because that's clearly, this
because
is your
like
gig,
all
right?
Collectors, yes, this is I'm the head of design. I'm the man that makes the products.
Wow. Wow. So you
the,
get to choose
the,
what gets made.
I'm the house nerd. That's right. Because I'm the only one that cares. I said, we should do Dead Man. And they said, who's that? So I start wearing T-shirts with Dead Man on it. And they were like, oh, that. Oh, okay. Who's he? Is he a villain? I'm like, among the heathen. I'm among the heathen. So
you have to enlighten as you go.
I am the house nerd. And I introduce myself to people like that. And Marty's like, oh, don't put yourself down. I said, no. Nerd is a badge of honor. Okay? We have conquered the earth. Everybody, every school child knows who Thanos is. The 1974, I was the only guy.
Oh, in the 70s, man, it was like a shame. It's like if you got called that name, I mean, I got
That's
called
right.
that name constantly as a kid in school, man. I was just like with my That's Space right. 1999 lunchbox. I mean, I had everything hurled at me that there was, right? I mean, just you name it. But now it's just like, you know, the nerds have inherited the earth, I mean, completely. So it's just
That's
like
right.
the worm has turned, man, if we only had known.
Yep. Now, like all, and when I started the seventh grade, my mother said to me, stop playing with dolls. Go meet a girl. And she made me give away all my Migos.
Oh!
I couldn't even keep them in the house.
Duh.
I had to bring them to my friend's little brother, and he destroyed them in a week.
Oh, Doc, my heart goes out to you, man. My heart goes out to you.
They, every collector I talk to, they didn't end the relationship. That's why they're collectors.
We're trying to replace a void, filling the void, man. Trying to
filling a void.
Replace something
childhood.
That was taken.
So, that's right. So I went on to, I'm still reading comic books. I've never given up those. But I went to high school and met a girl. And she, for my 18th birthday, gave me Superman, Spider-Man, and Captain America Amigos from Toys R Us.
And Doc,
I said,
did I read correctly, Doc, that your wife was from Queens? Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, from Douglaston. Yep.
See, another thing that we have in common, brother. My wife is from Flushing, so there you go, man.
I'm from Floral Park. All right. She's at one end of the Nassau Suffolk. She's at one end of the Nassau Queens border. I'm in the other spot of the
That's
Nassau
great.
Queens border.
That's great, man. And she got you figures for your birthday?
He said, well, I know you like superheroes. So she went to Toys R Us and saw Migos on the pegs there. And bought me Superman, Spider-Man, and Captain America, which was
That's
still
a sign, man. You don't need a clearer sign than that.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I married that girl. Trust me. We've been together. We've been married 35 years.
Congratulations, man. That's great. I love that story.
Once I got my Migos back, I thought, oh, well, I'm just this weird guy that collects these toys. Nobody else cares. When the Internet came out, I found I wasn't the only grown man who wanted his toys back. I found the Migo Museum. Like Star Trek fans. I go to Star Trek conventions, and I see Migos there, but, you know, didn't really connect it. Told me that Migo went out of business. And I said, well, that's wrong. That has to be corrected. That is a wrong of time. And I swore right then and there I would bring Migo back.
You had a mission, brother. You had a mission.
Yes, the Internet comes out. I'm on Netscape Navigator. The first thing I type in is Migo. I find the Migo Museum. And they're all guys. We're all conversing with each other in the early, very early chat room. To find out everybody's missing parts. So I said, well, I got to figure out how to make replacement parts. We are all missing boots, belts, capes, gloves. I got to figure out how to make these. So I found a mold rubber that would not shrink appreciably and a resin that would not give me cancer, and figured out how to reproduce plastic parts, boots, belt, the head. I figured out that Mego's capes were made from umbrellas. So I used to sit on the Long Island Railroad selling Batman capes. And some guy says to me one day, "What are you doing?" I said, "Mind my own." And he said, "Oh, sorry. It's the Long Island Railroad. Don't look. Don't talk." I said, "I'm making capes." And he goes, "Oh, for kids?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, an 8-inch kit." But yes. Okay.
He's very small for his age, you know?
Yeah, very small, yeah. But, so I started to sell the parts, and I said to my wife, "Yeah, I really need to make the body. That's the next step." And I said, "That's going to cost $20,000 in China." And she says to me, "Why don't we take a home equity loan to pay for it?"
Wow.
Like, okay. You know, had watched me pour plastic and sew capes and make the little oven mitt gloves and, you know, make phasers and belts and all that. And she was like, "Well, yeah, I've been working with a factory that was able to do small runs of like 10,000. And they were like, "Yeah, okay, we'll make the body." I had to send them an original to, you know, use as a model. And they showed up in my driveway one day, 2,000 naked, headless bodies. And I was just looking my fingers through the box going, "Whoa."
That's
I
great.
My wife,
oh,
and I'm
my
like,
God.
"Oh." I was like, "Hey, how are you doing?" She's like, "It's cool." Allowed me to then, I met Marty Agram at MegoCon, and I said, "I want to bring back Mego." And he goes, "Yeah, you and a lot of other guys. Why don't you go get a license like Star Trek and come talk to me?" So a friend of mine who used to work in Star Trek licensing had just moved back to New York. We went around asking, you know, about everything, and finally came up with Diamond Select Toys had the Star Trek license. So we met with them, and Chuck DeSera, the head of Diamond Select, is a huge Mego fan, so he didn't let on. And he said, "Yeah, I think this is great. I'm sold." So we made Kirk and the Klingon, Spock and the Andorian, McCoy and the Romulan with Diamond Select toys.
Wow, that's great. So they didn't look at the idea of Mego coming back as like a threat or a competition. They embraced it.
But Marty, I went to Marty Abrams and said, "I want to bring back Mego." And he's, you know, when we got this deal, I went to Marty and he said, "I don't want to bring back Mego yet. I don't know if I ever want to, but I'll let you do this with my blessing." He's a very good father. Very godfather. Good fellas, godfather, you know. We're all New Yorkers. Marty lives in Great Neck. So you know Douglaston, you know Great Neck.
I got a lot of family that's like in Port Washington area, so not that far, man. Not that
there
far.
You so,
there you go.
During COVID, we were working out of Marty's basement.
Oh, that's great.
Which
that's great.
Overlooks the Throg's Neck Bridge. So it's hardly a hard trip, but. Yeah,
but, you know,
but
inspiration.
Like,
you
like,
got to take inspiration where you can find it, you know? So,
you know, Marty says to me, "You know, oh, go get some lunch out of the refrigerator." And I'm like, "Oh, my God, I'm looking at Marty Abrams' refrigerator. If I took a picture of this, Mego guys would go crazy."
That's great, man.
Like,
that's
I can walk in his house without knocking. I'm family.
So you like probably are, I'm guessing that it was your influence and your enthusiasm. I'm just guessing here, Doc, but that's what convinced Marty to finally say, "Okay, I'm ready. I want to bring it back." Was it because of you?
No. It was Target saying, "We'll take 600,000 figures for an end cap."
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, Marty could care less about my enthusiasm. He's glad. I'm so thrilled about it. But unless it's real, you know, he goes, "Hey, Now, mind you, I'm being facetious. You know, he spent years talking to major retailers. He's always been in the toy business. He never retired, so he's always been talking. And Target came up and said, yes, we will take him. So once he got that, he said to me, all right, now we're back. I'm bringing back Mego to the company. We're going to be out there in Target. We'll go to Walmart. We'll go all over.
That's great, man.
You know,
that's
and you're
great.
You're going to be the guy. Yeah, come to the office Monday. You're going to be the guy doing it.
And you came in and took over the design aesthetic, right? So you were basically, because you knew how things used to look, and you wanted to marry the new and the old, right?
Yeah. I want to make sure that that other companies tried to make it like Mego, and they failed. Either they were too large, they were trying too hard to get a crazy expression. Mego is very much, what happens in toy companies is you start out and say, we want to make a Mego. And then the designers all want to put their own thing on it. So you end up in a different place. My job was to just make sure that what came out of the other end was what Mego was. So I really was just quality control. You know, I wanted
and
to
having
sure
like the continuity of everything so that like the,
right.
the stuff that
make sure we
got made
the
now fit in.
Right, exactly. And even the choices on how you do things. You want to have that simple toy look. It's to go ultra detailed, you know, to do a lot of extra stuff. And I go, Mego's bestseller was Spider-Man. He was a silkscreen bodysuit and a head. And they sold millions of them. Because
but
it
it's simplicity.
Perfect.
It's simple. It's right. It's simple.
That's right.
There's no non-identifying Spider-Man. It's like you could go anywhere in the world.
That's right.
And people go, that's Spider-Man. I don't care where you go.
Same with Kirk and Spock.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just iconic,
shirt,
man. It's iconic.
A pair of black pants. Exactly. Yeah. The phaser was right. They got the details right. You know, they didn't give them but it was a light blue phaser because they. And I asked him about that, and he said, if we made it in black, he would lose it, and you wouldn't be able to see it in the black pants.
Great
so
point.
So we
call it
light
point.
Blue for the good guys and red for the bad guys.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
The Klingons didn't get a disruptor. Yeah, Marty's a Star Trek fan. He watches all the series. Yeah, we've had long arguments about Quark. Which is so geeky surreal.
In terms of like what he's like as a character, or what he should look like, or what let us in on an
everything
argument, man.
About
everything.
About the character on the show, about what his outfit should be like when we made one. We made a Quark. He said, I want to do Quark. I like Quark. So I put on my to-do on my list. We got to do Quark. So I got to do Sisko and Quark. That's the only Deep Space Nine I got to do. And, he said, oh, I want to do Seven of Nine. And I said, not with our female body. We just can't pull that off. And he's like, you're right. We got to do a new female body. I go, we do a new male body, also what hit was Mego, the 50th anniversary of World's Greatest Superheroes was 1972, they actually came out, at Corvette. He knew the owners of Corvettes in New York, and he had them take the first run of in November of 1972, before Toy Fair, in the next year, where he'd show them to every buyer. He wanted to get to see how kids reacted to it. And he sold out in like a weekend.
Wow. Wow.
But,
that's great.
So 2022 was the 50th anniversary of that. So we put out 50th anniversary World's Greatest Superheroes in the original packages. I got Warner Brothers to agree to let us use the original artwork that Mego used. Even though it wasn't actually something that you could pin down as for a source. I said, because Mego artists redrew them. in those days, they didn't get digital files. They got images, black and white images, and they'd light box them. Or, use a light box or a projector to change the size and then redraw it. So I'm like, that's not a Kurt Swan Superman. That's a Mike Bloie Superman.
Hand-created work, man.
Redrawn. And they said, well, okay, you can identify it. You can tell, that's the pedigree. That's what we need to know.
That's so great.
So I was able
to
put out exactly the art, exactly the look, and a 50th anniversary sticker on the window box so you don't confuse it with the original.
Perfect. That's so cool. I'm really curious, man. A couple other questions I want to ask you, and I want to make sure Charles gets a chance to chime in here too, because I don't want to monopolize. But it's just so hard not to ask 1,000 questions. But these days, because it's not just Target exclusively right now. You're in like at least Walmart as well. Am I right?
Yeah. We're all over. Yeah.
The
scary thing is retail has changed. Everything now is Amazon. You can have it tomorrow.
Yeah, unless brick and mortar, right?
Major retailers. Yeah, well, that's just it. And you can get directly to the fan, and the major retailers are like, well, we don't want to get stuck with stuff. Look at Funko. Every store is overwhelmed with those Funko Pops. So they're all leery about taking too much inventory.
But do you work with like companies like, say, Big Bad Toy Store, Entertainment Earth, right? I mean, sell a lot of Mego products.
Oh, yeah,
they?
Yeah. And Diamond. Diamond Comics is our distributor. And Licensed Play, who Maury's worked with for years, is also our distributor, I mean, we have a Mego guy, Frank Wojo, who buys from Licensed Play wholesale and then retails them to our customers. So he's got a great reputation for for packaging them nicely, wrapping, like at Entertainment Earth when they started, said, look, we only sell mint. We'll only send you perfect version. Now, no dings, no bends, no, crushed in boxes. Because when people go to Walmart, frequently they're frustrated because if anything's even there, put out enough. They don't order deep enough to meet the demand.
Yeah, and they use like a snow shovel to unload the pallet, right? It's just stuff's all, dinged up to hell.
Yes, exactly, yeah. But like here on Long Island, there's only one Walmart that carries the 50th anniversary, Migos. And that's in East Meadow on 106 and Hempstead Turnpike. And there's a guy that already beats me there. He tells me, Dave Nichols, who's a big Star Trek fan, will email me and say, I'm here now. There are three of each left. Otherwise, I would never see them at Walmart.
It's amazing, man. It is just amazing. But I don't know that everybody knows necessarily because I want to talk about who you think the current demographic is. I'm sure it's diverse, but who makes up the biggest chunk of like the marketplace, right? But I don't know if all of our listeners know the variety of different properties that you guys have dipped your toe in. I mean, Jim mentioned like Planet of the Apes. We've talked about superheroes, but you guys have done like an Exorcist figure at one point. You've done rock and roll figures. You've got I see you're doing like House of the Dragon, like Daemon Targaryen figures. I mean, you are all over it, brother.
Yes, because our customer base is mainly adult, and adult males at that. But back in the day, Mego could only do like the four basic monsters, and even then they had to be goofy. Now, people look at companies like NECA doing detailed action figures. Just like us nerds have taken over the earth, we kept buying toys. And now toy companies know they have to really sell to the hardcore fan who's an adult, and sometimes a middle-aged adult, you know. So a lot of properties that you think are too niche-y to be popular actually sell pretty well. Horror is one of our best sellers. So we did Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I think we've done four of them so far, and I got more in the pipeline.
That's become really popular.
And to me,
everybody
was,
seems to love that now.
It
it's just like exploded.
You know what? It's the look. You know what works well, Amigo, is Star Trek, Planet of the Apes, superheroes, Wizard of Oz. What doesn't sell well is Sears and Fact of Life. Happy Days, except for Fonzie. You know, they look normal. You know, if he's just wearing a suit, it looks boring.
Yeah, you want to have something that's really
Mego
heavy into design, right? A really strong design,
right.
Like costume vibe to it.
Mego works better with bright colors and unique heads, you know. Star Trek definitely has that, you know, original series with the gold, the blue, and the red stands out. Next Generation, a little harder since Picard and Riker all have the same color. And then Geordi and Data have the same color. You know, it just seems less interesting. But,
I got to
say,
though, man,
really
your next generation figures are just sensational. I mean, they look great.
Well, thank you.
I think they all look great, but, you know, but they just really, you know, you look at those, you're like, okay, someone spent, just the vibe is more time and, you know, labor of love vibe to it, right? I mean, that's what I see when I see those.
Well,
you know, can't help it.
We're of the body. You know, we know. We're fans. You know, it's not like we have to go, oh, I don't know. What does Q look like? Well, I said we got to do Q in the judges' room, and they are looking at me like, "What is that?" But Marty knows
because he's a
fan. I told Marty. He said, "Absolutely, he's a fan. He is of the body."
That's great,
so,
man. That's the best
you know,
best description I've ever heard, man. That's just fantastic.
I always say, we had a lunch with the Paramount people and Mego people. And somebody from Paramount said to me, "Oh, have you been watching Discovery?" And I said, "Well, I've seen some of it. I know Pike shows up, and when you see Pike, you know the Talosians can't be far behind." Well, all the Star Trek people let out a big laugh, and all the Mego people said, "What the hell did you just say?" And I'm like, "Pike's a fixed point in time. If you see Pike, you know the Talosians are either already shown up or going to show up." And they're like, "Who's the Talosians?" I'm like, "Don't you know?" So I had to make a screen accurate Talosian that's in stores now.
That's great. That's great. And I know you've done at least a couple. You've done a Pike. Are you going to do more Strange New Worlds figures?
Absolutely, because Strange New Worlds is awesome. But I have to see how it sells. You know, we put the stuff out. And that's why we usually do, like, one or two of a character. Like, with Game of Thrones, we did Damian Targaryen and Rhaenyra Targaryen. Rhaenyra, I don't even know if she made it to production. I know Damon was not that good on pre-orders, but Marty thought it was an awesome figure. So he just okayed it. Now the new season's coming out. We'll see if maybe, you know, there's more, if they can get a bigger audience.
Yeah.
Everybody
how many,
worn out
do you like several waves per year? Like, how do you map it out? Does a wave cover more than one license? How do you guys sort things out, man?
Oh, yeah. We do whatever we've got going, whatever license, Creepshow. We have the Creepshow movie from 82, and we have the TV series on Shudder. Can't talk about the new stuff I'm working on, but basically, in our Warner Brothers contract is not just DC superheroes, but a lot of movies too. So I did a Clark Griswold from Christmas Vacation. He was supposed to come out around Christmas, but it got you know, with the shipping problems, it just got delayed. We couldn't get it out of the factory until the end of January. So Clark Griswold is showing up on the shelves now. But I was like, it doesn't matter. Fans are fans. They dig it. You know, I did a Krampus. And these guys had no idea who Krampus is. I go, in Europe, he's very popular.
He's crazy
like
popular.
Hasselhoff.
He's crazy popular. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. He's anti-Santa.
Man, let me ask you one more question.
Yeah,
sure. I'm just really curious. I know there's probably some stuff you can't talk about. I don't want to talk about, like, future stuff because I know you can't talk about stuff like that. But just have there ever been, like, properties that you just wanted to – just desperately wanted to be able to give the Mego vibe to, but for some reason or other didn't work out? Like, for me, I always thought – what would be the most, I would fall over and, you know, strip the pegs if I ever saw them in a toy store, would be Blade Runner Mego figures, right? I mean, that would be, it just seems like it's
exactly
screaming
it.
For it.
That was exactly it. Our Warner Brothers contract had Blade Runner. And we had it scheduled for a two-pack in Target in 2018. And I was going to do the roof scene with Roy Batty and Decker.
Oh!
And I already had the Decker scope done. We already had the gun tools. And they came back and said, oh, no, we don't have that anymore because Blade Runner 2049 is up. Could only do Blade Runner while we had 2029 likeness of Harrison Ford. And that's up. And it's nothing we do about it. You know, but that gun got into Charlie's Angel somehow. So Decker's two-trigger gun is with Pete Jackson in Charlie's Angels. And I know the Mego guys know. Like, I'd never be able to do Lieutenant Leslie from Star Trek. Right? Eddie Paskey. But when we were going to do, Target wanted us to do Married with Children and Brady Bunch and Back to Life and we were like, I told them, I go, this is not going to sell. They were like, no, moms are going to love these. You, trust us, we know, we're Target. I said, okay. So Al Bundy, since I didn't have likeness rights for Ed O'Neill, I made Lieutenant Leslie Al Bundy. And I said, I know Mego guys, Mego Star Trek fans will buy Al Bundy. To make him into Lieutenant Leslie.
That's great, man. Oh my God. I got to say one thing that I'm just a huge fan of is the Hammer figures that you guys did, man. Peter Cushing in particular. Damn.
First of all, Lee Dracula.
So
that's
great.
That's what I always wanted. First of all, Lee Dracula.
Those are just so cool.
Yes.
Yeah,
so,
I had no clue those were even coming
until
I saw them. I was just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and we were not allowed to do the werewolf.
Interesting.
It was
like a likeness thing or something
like
that? Or?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Oliver Reed, but we weren't able to do it. There's something about the producers did not sign the deal. And yet I see masks out there.
Yeah,
but we were told flat out we cannot do the Oliver Reed werewolf. And I was like,
weird.
All right, well, that's good. I'll get busy with everybody else. Yeah.
Wow.
We made a deal with Top where we were producing two figures a week. And I had a list that was just, I was running as fast as I can. I did Sisko and Quark and Worf. Dory and we were just going through. I had every week I was going to have either a monster or a Star Trek character or some of, and then you know, Top got bought by Fan Fanatics, and all of a sudden they're like, that deal is null and void. New corporate owners.
Wow, everything disappears.
Like,
it's crazy.
What? What do you mean? What? Like, I'm running at, 50 miles an hour. They just said, stop. Don't do it anymore.
Frustrating, man. You got to be really nimble, I guess, these days, right? Just flex and
you know
what's going to happen.
We got a license from our license from Warner Brothers. It had every Friday the 13th movie, and I started working on Jason, and they came back and said, nope, you don't have it.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, what do you mean you don't have it? It's right. It was a big, every movie was listed separately. They're like, nope, don't got it.
Wow. Thanks, lawyers.
Yeah, literally. And I was like, okay.
Like typical year, Doc, how many different new figures do you do in a typical year?
When we do a wave, I try to do about 13, 15, I try to do some 50th anniversary, some horror, some Star Trek, whatever else we got cooking, I never know. Like, I get told, oh, by the way, we're going for this license. And I go, okay, I better get sculpting. Because we turn around a product. We did Pinocchio for Guillermo del Toro. They contacted us in, like, October and said we want it to be on shelf in December when the movie comes out. And we had to tool Pinocchio from scratch,
And how much notice was that? They give you that little notice?
By October. Yeah, well, that's the trick. Nobody else can move as fast as Mego.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
We literally could go from concept to shelf in 75 days.
That's
because
amazing.
Because the bodies
are
always the same.
That's wild.
What was this? We had to actually do Pinocchio and Master Jay Cricket has new tools. So it wasn't just like we could take a head and make it into Geppetto. We had to tool that too. But they shared their files with us from the actual production. So the Pinocchio we made was actually from the movie. Like, we didn't reinvent them. We just took the digital file and made changes to make the articulation.
That's amazing, because they were just saying, here's the file, go to town. Wow, that's great.
And we had them in Walmart, and he won the Academy Award in March for Best Picture.
Well, that's got to be the fastest turnaround time of anything I've ever heard of. My God, that's crazy. That's just crazy. That's how you get to the moon, brother. That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, I want to pass this off to some of our hosts here so everybody gets a chance to talk to you. But I just want to make sure that our fans know that you really have a rare passion for Star Trek with Mego, because, and I think if you need any evidence of that, there's a ton you can go looking for. But for me, what I always appreciate is, to my knowledge, nobody else has ever tackled the salt vampire except for you guys.
I actually did them twice. Once with Diamond Select and then with Mego.
And is it the same look, or does he look different with Diamond Select?
Well, same look, but new sculpt.
We
didn't just take the existing sculpt. We actually went to another guy. The guy who sculpted the first salt vampire was James Brady. It was a different factory, so I didn't have that tool. And James wasn't available because he was having children. So I went to Andy Cavolt, who does a lot of my sculpts, who has, been with me for 20 years. And he sculpted the salt vampire. So, it is two different. Obviously they're very similar. You have only seconds of screen time to even look at the salt vampire. You had a better look of her in the Trelane episode when she's in the alcove. But, we sculpted the salt vampire twice, and both times did very well with it.
Well, very cool, because I don't think anyone else has really tackled that scene, man. So folks of a certain vintage.
Playmates did a 5-inch.
Say again?
asshole vampire.
They did?
I don't think they didn't do it in the 10. They didn't do it in the 10-inch line, but I'm pretty sure. See, part of my job is to know what everybody else has done, too.
I think they designed it, but
whenever
it hasn't released, as far as
character.
I know. I didn't think that Playmates
really?
Ever got to – I don't think it ever got out. I think it was one of those things you'd, like,
wow.
see, like, advertised in, like, Diamond, you know, the Diamond catalog every week in the comic shop, and then I don't think it ever
made
it out.
That's the trick, too. Yeah.
It's all
one
those,
of the things
the,
that we've come to realize. Sorry?
All those
one
unreleased
of the
things.
Yeah, okay. All right, maybe it was, but we've come to realize that pre-orders are very important to the market because pre-orders tell us how much interest there is in a figure. When we bring these to distributors, if they don't know the property, like a, just like doing Dead Man or, you know, Brainiac, if they're not comic fans, they go, who's that guy? If they're not into Game of Thrones, then they don't know, or yeah, House of Dragon, they go, who's the guy with long hair that looks like Doctor Who?
Well, man,
so, you know,
this has been such a hoot, brother. I want to pass this over to another one of our hosts, but I just want to thank you for this and for Doc for keeping the if you will the stolen dreams alive for boomers and beyond and all the nerds yet to be
right.
who are trying to fill that hole that got taken away is a chance you can in fact go home again thanks to the work that you're doing, man, and it's clearly a labor of love for what you and Marty do. I mean, it's just such a great thing to see such a wide variety of cool things and at toy shows and comic shops and Targets and everything there. So this has been a hoot for me, I'll tell you. Dangerous because now I've seen that there's so much more Mego product than I even realized. I think I barely even scratched the surface, and I'm like, oh man, no, there's this. Oh my God, so it's just crazy. But
yeah.
But let me do the gentlemanly thing and thank you. And I want to pass this over to our Las Vegas contingent and our good pal Charles because I know he's busting at the gut with some questions too. Take it away, Charles.
Well, Paul, not a whole lot, but Doc, I think the biggest question I've got just is. You can't say a lot, but what are our chances of getting more Star Trek, new Trek stuff? I know we've got two first season Discovery characters, but we still got a lot
more characters.
That we
wish Michael Burnham and Saru. The reality is they just – Saru did pretty well. Michael Burnham was not well received. I've gone to Star Trek conventions in Las Vegas, you know, at the the creation show. Mego would have a booth there, and I see all these people walking around in Discovery uniforms, and I'm like, this is a series to get into. It's part of our license. We should be putting out product to a new generation of Star Trek fans. And Saru was, you know, like I said, sold well. He's a perfect Star Trek character. He's an alien, you know, custom. So Michael Burnham, we put her out. The actress, we got back the word from the actress that do not put makeup on her. Okay, we won't put makeup on her. And fans said, oh, she looks terrible. She doesn't have any makeup. I'm like, I was told not to put makeup. So we kept going and did Captain Pike from Strange New World, actually from Discovery first. With his gold uniform.
Yep.
And that sold well. And so when Strange New Worlds came out, I said, we got to jump in on this. But basically we do two characters to try to feel out the interest. Instead of doing a line of six and then find out, no, there's no interest. You know, there's not enough fan support. And that's why I said the real frustrating thing is pre-order. We need people to pre-order to let us know and our distributors know what they want, you know, what's popular. It's almost like voting.
Yep.
So with Strange New Worlds, I did Pike in the green shirt and Spock. And, you know, so for the first time we did Spock that wasn't Leonard Nimoy. And the Amigo guys tried to say to me, can't we just use, you know, the old Spock head? I said, no, it's a completely different actor. It will jump. Nobody will go for it. But couldn't get them to go with a new phaser design because Strange New World, the phasers look pretty much like the original series. A little more, you know, some little more bling in there,
yeah.
But had a tiny little plastic accessory done in one color. So I think I was able to get some silver put on the phasers just to make it look a little different.
Do you guys have licensing for Lower Decks yet?
Yes. We have it's in our license, and so is Picard. And I was working on a Devon attendee because she's the most interesting. You know,
yep.
I mean, Roman Miller, you know, and the girl, I forget her name, but
Mariner.
But, you know, I mean, they look like
Boimler.
Mariner, right. Yeah, right. But they look pretty normal. Like I said, Migo actually usually works better with the more exotic characters. And it's been very frustrating not to be able to do more females. But I wanted to use the new Migo female body for Devani Tendi. But that's been held up in production. You know, I also want to put out the World's Greatest Superheroes, the Super Gal. So that's been delayed a little while. So, yeah, I definitely am. I know the shows. I really didn't see how that would work as Migo. But, you know, I know the fan base is there. I go to conventions whenever possible with product and try to, you know, and spend 6 days on my feet talking. But I need Star Trek fans to kind of, you know, like step up and pre-order. Just like they do with the 12-inch, you know, the 1/6 scale. You know, all that stuff has to be ordered ahead of time.
Well, it might be a suggestion might be a suggestion for creation. Might be a suggestion for creation conventions.
Yeah.
Try getting a panel.
Yeah.
Try getting one of the panels, and especially on the main stage.
We have.
And discuss it.
Yeah, Marty has been, you know, it's just, I know, I just heard Creation is back doing a New York convention. I think it's in New Jersey.
I don't remember, but I know they're doing quite a few.
Yes, they're going.
Yeah,
they're
be back in the Star Trek
convention.
They're going to
be in Caucus, Jersey. Yep.
Okay, so it is. Yeah, and so Northern Jersey is like New York. So, you know, that's great. We'll be there. We're going to be at Long Island Star Trek Convention in May. Tell on Long Island that, you know, it's kind of a small, it's growing, it's trying, but it's a small show. The Star Trek conventions are very much driven by the actors. You know, the Star Trek fans really want to meet the actors. And so that's, you have to go where the actors are going to be. But, yeah, no, I definitely can get Marty to come to a Creation show. I mean, he used to go to Creation shows, the Thanksgiving Creation shows in New York. You know, he lives right on Long Island. Going into the Hotel Pennsylvania was no big deal for him. So back in the 70s and 80s, he used to go to those.
Well,
I'm
hoping we get some new stuff coming in.
Well,
I'm always working on this stuff. We just did the Enduring Ambassador and the Thelosian. Green actor. You know, because Migo's Andorian was actually the imposter from Journey to Babel.
Wow.
Yeah, if you look at the head sculpt on the Migo Andorian, the Orion, disguised as an Andorian. So I wanted to do Reggie Nadler as the Andorian ambassador. So I got a sculpt done by James Brady, the guy that did Khan for us, and Sulu, and Chekhov, and it was a bit of a fight to get it out the door, but he's showing up in stores now.
So, Doctor, we have a caller on the line, a fan that would like to ask you a question. So let's get this caller on the line. Hey, what's up? Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from tonight?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, what's up, Ray?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing this wet evening over here?
So you have a question for Paul, for Dr. Mego?
Yeah, I got a question. Paul, how you doing? My name is Ray. How you doing? Yeah, I remember the mega show. Yes. I used to have the old Star Trek, you know, kept the doors and all that. Yes. And be honest, I still got those.
The original ones?
Oh yes, I still
got them.
I got all of them. You know, Kirk, Spock, all of them. But the only problem is that I don't have the aliens. I never had the aliens. Never did.
Miguel put out two sets of aliens. The Geron, the Keeper, the Gorn, and
the I never had the aliens. I would have the original crew to Enterprise, but I never had the aliens because I have a war raid. When my mom gave it to me, I was like, I was four or five years old, right? And pulling the one on the box set, you know, and the bridge Enterprise and stuff like that. I still got it.
Miguel put out a second set of aliens that was the Romulan, the Andorian, the Mogatsu, and the Talosian. And they were very hard to find.
I saw them as a kid, but the way though, I never had them. I never had that as a kid. But years later on, when Star Trek, I got both figures.
Right, and you're right.
I remember the Batman, Robin, and the Hulk, Spider-Man. I never had those. But my team did have them like years ago. I never had those. The Mago. And you're right. The Planet Ace figures, and they had the Planet Ace City playset. Yeah, they had that. I saw that.
It was done as 12 inch. They were done in the late, like 1978, 1979. They did them as 12-inch figures.
Right. The same kind of thing with the Starbuck Apollo and the Cylons. I remember seeing that years ago was promoted. I mean, they were pulling that hard years ago.
they were done in Battlestar Galactic was done as like Star Wars.
I took out my solo with Kenna. The remake. It's not like the ones like you know from Kenna is a remake.
What happened to
1999
was made by Mego in actually England. They were only sold in England.
Oh.
In the U.S., it was Mattel who had the Space 1999 license. Didn't have much posability. They didn't bend at the knees or the arms. But they did
Koenig,
Russell, and Bergman.
Ray, we're running out of time, Ray, so we have to...
No problem. Like I said, guys, I'll call guys next Thursday. You know what I'm saying? You have a blessed night. And like I said before, the Yankees come back. We come back hard this year. We'll watch out now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right, thanks for calling, Ray. Say hello to your wife for us.
All right, no problem. She say bye.
Bye, Ray.
Goodbye.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Paul. I just want to ask a quick question myself. What about Captain Killy from Discovery in that awesome Mirror Universe uniform?
Listen, I have a list. I have a list of what I'd like to make. And I have to temper it with what the distributors are willing to buy. I can make a prototype and put it out there, but once Berman didn't sell, every time I talk about Discovery, I get a cold shoulder.
Well,
but
I've got
the Strange New World, more of an interest going, you know.
Well, I mean, to be totally honest, I have Saru and Burnham both right here on my shelf. I'm looking at them, and Saru is awesome, but Burnham is blah. She's just not.
We did a good job on the uniform.
But she's
the
just
uniform's
too,
accurate.
Yeah,
but the face
she just doesn't...
was what that's what we got back to do her with long hair, rooted. They said no, short hair. I've been having the same problem with number one from Strange New World. I want to do her with her hair down. They tell me she has to be in a bun. And I'm like, okay.
It's like the license store has
the power. If they don't approve it, I can't put it out.
They picked the most unappealing Burnham that they possibly could have, and torpedoed it because that's the Burnham that I wanted to see a better Burnham than that.
Yeah, I know.
I get disappointed. But Saru looks... Uh-huh. Saru is fantastic.
Because it's makeup. It's a lot easier to do aliens. It's easier to do, you know, like monsters, you know, because it's exaggerated. And it's, you know, built up that way to be more memorable. When you do a character, you know, with a regular face, you have to really nail the face, you know. You have to get a good likeness. But the whole thing is Mego also had that kind of less detail. It isn't like a 1/6 scale figure where you can put in all these lines and fine detail to really capture the likeness. It has to be the essence of the actor. you know, instead of a three-dimensional sculpt, you know, of their face. So, you know, like, I could, some people didn't like the Ethan Peck Spock we did. Some thought it looked great. Some people tell me, oh, that doesn't look like him at all. So all I can do is go by what the licensor will allow. I've got sculptors who study reference, who try to capture that, those, you know, those parts of the person's face that kind of give a likeness. But then if the licensor says, no, we want to change, I got to change it.
Well, I'll tell you what, doctor. With Michelle Yeoh being an Oscar winner and Section 31 coming out, there's Emperor Giorgio is screaming to be a figure.
I had Emperor Giorgio on my list, and I got, well, we'll see.
Well, they're so, making a mistake. They're making a mistake, a big mistake.
Well, you know, but in a way, remember, just keep this in mind. Mego was not out when Star Trek was first run. It didn't come till 1975. So, you know, Star Trek is eternal. As long as Paramount will let us make Star Trek figures, we'll keep working on it. You know, I've told them, I said, if all we do is Kirk and Spock, that'll sell well, but people get bored. Why, when we start working with Target, we start working with Target on the in 2018, and we did two packs. And I said, right off the bat, I want to do Mirror Universe. Because everybody says when you see Mirror Universe, this series is the manufacturer's done. They're now up to outfit changes. And so the first two I wanted to do in the two pack was Kirk and Spock in the transporter room in the Mirror Universe. Because I want to let the fans know. And third wave at Target, I did Sulu and Uhura on the bridge in the Mirror Universe. And we did a new face sculpt for Sulu because I wasn't just going to put a little red mark on a Sulu face and call that scar.
Well, I'm glad that you're back, and I'm glad that you're working on it. And you know, before we say goodnight, though, I do have one suggestion that I just want to throw out because for me, my all-time favorite Star Trek movie is Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. I would love to see a Cybok.
Cybok.
I would love to see a Cybok, and he's been on Strange New Worlds now. So, you know, throw me a Cybok, please. I'll pre-order it. I'll order it right now.
That's what I got. Right. That's the trick.
Trust well, thank you. Yeah. I just want to say thank you.
I hear you.
I want to say thank you so much, Doctor, for hanging out with us and sharing some of your knowledge about Star Trek and about the toy line and Mego and their history. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much, and good night.
Anytime.
Thanks, Doc.
I'm
this has been a blast, man. Thanks for
all
everything.
Right.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night.
You too. All right, guys. That was Paul Clark, better known as Dr. Mego. And now it's time to get on to our regularly scheduled show, Already in Progress. And we're going to start off with...
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we usually turn to Eric, but Eric is eating pizza pies and enjoying himself, so we're going to turn over to Paul. So, Paul, you want to do some remembrances for us this week?
Oh, brother, it would be my pleasure. Before we jump in there, I just have to say that was a great guest. So much fun, man.
Sure.
He's just like, I just love hearing his voice and the way he describes things. He's just what a natural guy to be in the toy business, man. He's just sensational. But that was hilarious. So what a great guest. I'm hoping our fans will race over to the Target app and website, because it seems to me there's still quite a gigantic selection of Mego Star Trek figures available out there. So check them out and embrace the retro, right? And get out there, and you can see little tweaks and little stylistic evolutions in the figures that have gone on, but they still feel like those cool old retro figures of old. So it's a balancing act, but boy, Paul did a great job. So and it's really cool that there's still a family-owned business ever since the 50s, right? And that they're still out there in Long Island making it happen. So I think it's great. So forgive the digression, we'll jump right in. But yeah, that was a really fun segment. Great guest. So, Paul, thanks for coming on the show tonight. We had a blast having you. So onward to the remembrances. I feel like I might burst into flames because this is Eric's segment. Typically, he always does this. So try to bring the same reverence and detail to it that he does. So first of all, we'd like to, again, these are all luminaries from Star Trek who have set sail and gone on into the great unknown. So first of all, we're remembering actor Kenneth Toby, a veteran character actor from Oakland, California, who we're acknowledging from his appearance as Rurigan in the Deep Space Nine second season episode, Shadow Play. Moving on to original series territory here, we're going to say hello to Ed Peck, a great American character actor who played Lieutenant Colonel Fellini. A little directorial tip of the hat there in the original series first season episode, Tomorrow Is Yesterday. He's the one who leans over to Kirk when they've got him prisoner and goes, I'm going to lock you up for 200 years. Just, not a man with much of a sense of humor, that character, but boy, did Ed Peck sell it. Just great. Really, really perfect. Happy birthday in remembrance to John Stew, first actor to portray Alexander Rozenko in Next Generation, fourth season episode, Reunion. And we talk a lot about Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, on this podcast. So we'd like to say happy birthday to Philip Richard Allen, who played Captain Esteban in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Great stuff there. This one, I think we all have to, take a moment, take a deep breath, because this is a beloved individual who's certainly been a big part of our Star Trek lives these last few years. But happy birthday and fond memories to the great Annie Wershing, who was the actress who played Liana on Star Trek Enterprise first, second season episode, Oasis. That was her television acting debut. But we have become quite enamored with her on Star Trek Picard during the second season, where she played the Borg Queen so memorably. Annie Wershing, really, really great. What a lovely human being she was. Very gracious to fans, and just a wonderful personality, and a terrific performer. One of those folks you just feel like the world was robbed of a lot of really great performances, and because of her far too premature passing. So Annie Wershing, you definitely live on in the hearts of many fans and folks whose your work and your life is touched. So we're very sorry to have to mark your passing, but we have nothing but the most fondest memories of you, certainly here on this podcast. So wishing you eternal memories and all the best. Happy birthday to Ron Sobel. We love this episode. We love original series third season episode, Spectre of the Gun, right? And Ron Sobel is the actor who played Wyatt Earp himself. Excellent, cool Western love letter, Spectre of the Gun. So very, very cool. You want to talk about Star Trek, and you want to talk about the people who, had they not existed, I think Star Trek would have been fundamentally different. And this next individual, I think, exemplifies that tremendously because I think she really helped Star Trek find its voice and I think find its humanity in a way that became the most endearing because of her love of characters. And that's the great Dorothy D.C. Fontana, was a writer and script editor. Okay, back when it was a difficult gig to get even remotely a foot in the door when you were a woman. But she had the distinction of being one of the few people to have worked on both the original series as well as Star Trek the Animated Series, Star Trek the Next Generation, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Her contributions are just way too many to list here. We certainly only have a limited amount of time, but wow, I mean, so many great things that she was involved in. I don't know that everybody who listens to the show knows the animated series as well as some of us do, but she wrote, for my money, the best episode of the animated series, Yesteryear, which is the one where there's some time travel involved and Spock has to go back and face his childhood version of himself, which is just incredible. Really, really, if you've never seen that episode and you're a Star Trek fan, you are missing out. I would encourage you to run, don't walk, to Paramount Plus and watch that episode because it's just spectacular. Really, really Star Trek at its best. She started out as a script consultant and story editor. She co-wrote so many good episodes. The Enterprise Incident, Cat's Paw, Tomorrow's Yesterday, The Ultimate Computer, Journey to Babel, which introduced Spock's parents. So many great things that she did. DC Fontana beamed up in December of 2019 at the age of 80. But what a luminary, and I'm a big fan of writers and writers who really are able to make you feel emotions for the work and not just write action sequences, but actually make you care about the characters. And I think that was in Dorothy Fontana's blood. And she really was a trailblazer in terms of making roads for female writers in speculative fiction and television, and probably contributed more to the enduring legacy of what Vulcan culture is all about more than anybody else. So just a huge fan, really, really great, a legendary figure in the Star Trek universe. So we miss you, but wow, DC Fontana, do we ever appreciate you. You are the best. So thank you for your work and your voice. This next one's huge. We've seen a lot of notices on the internet recently because every time this anniversary comes around, it's just hard to believe it. But hero of mine growing up, without question, we would like to take a moment to acknowledge the birthday and the passing of the legendary Leonard Nimoy, best known for his Emmy Award-nominated portrayal of Spock, half-human, half Vulcan first officer and science officer aboard the USS Enterprise, the only member of the original series main cast to have featured in both the original pilot episode of The Cage and in continuing the role throughout the entire tenure of the original series, including the animated series and the first six Star Trek films. What an incredible legacy, and directed as well, and really made a inroads for other actors like Jonathan Frakes, right, who wanted to say, I'd like to try directing as well. And I think Leonard Nimoy helped pave that road and make that happen. He also appeared in The Next Generation fifth season episodes incredibly memorably in Unification 1 and Unification 2, where he had Spock as a ambassadorial peacemaker trying to bring stability and harmony to the Romulan Star Empire there. As a director, writer, and producer, he directed both Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, two incredibly successful and frankly beloved entries in the feature film annals of Star Trek. And then he returned to the role of Spock in the 2009 J.J. Abrams movie Star Trek there. It was the first time he played the character on screen since 1991. And he made his final cameo appearance as Spock in the sequel, 2013 Star Trek Into Darkness. But Leonard Nimoy was a great individual. He'd done so many different performances on other shows leading up to Star Trek. If you look at some of the television that was doing the late 50s and early 60s before Star Trek, he's all over the place, did a ton of stuff, just very memorable. Really, I think, had an interesting relationship with the character that he portrayed. He appeared in makeup as Spock in parades. He did that here in Oregon, my home state. He was as an early, went around and did, like, you know, crowd pleasing media events as an actor. And check out clips and footage of him appearing on the Carol Burnett Show. If you've never seen that before, he is hilarious on there. I had a great sense of humor and was a very just long lasting, a complicated relationship. I think for a while he was like, will I ever escape this character? And will I just forever be denied the chance to do other work because no one will see me but anything but Spock? But I think he made peace with it and really realized that he had created a character that spoke to so many people. I think anyone who struggled with the sense of having a foot in two different worlds and wondered, do I belong here? Is there a place for me, or am I ever going to be anything but an outcast? I think Spock as a character spoke to people profoundly, and I think he was really came to appreciate the value and the resonance that that character had for so many people of so many different cultures and so many different backgrounds who struggle with that duality. And I think that it's a powerful thing. So Leonard Nimoy is absolutely a legend and luminary, and really speaks to everything that makes Star Trek powerful and great. That's it for the remembrances section. I am threatening to be back, though, with some more birthday acknowledgments shortly. But first of all, Jim, did you have something you wanted to add about
Yeah, Nimoy? I just wanted to say that I remember watching him on Mission Impossible as Paris, if you guys remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I also remember him as the big baddie in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978 version, which was just scared the bejesus out of me. And most notably, obviously, Star Trek. But I used to come home and watch In Search Of continuously. And I remember him, and he had a little mustache, too, when he did In Search Of. So I remember Leonard Nimoy very fondly, and I think everything you said is spot on. He is very memorable, and he definitely is missed. So happy birthday. We miss you so much, Leonard Nimoy. That's all I wanted.
No, thanks, man. Definitely a powerful figure. I mean, definitely a legend. You could pretty much go anywhere on the planet and show a picture of Spock or Leonard Nimoy to somebody, and someone's going to be able to recognize who that is. I mean, there's a thing few artists and performers get to appreciate and enjoy in their life, but he definitely casts a long legacy and a long shadow, which is a great thing. Charles, you've got a bunch of birthdays, brother. Let's pass it over to you for a while.
I was going to say, I had one more comment myself to that one. And interesting, especially the book's good, but you want the audio book. Ever find the audiobook on Audible called I Am Spock? It was written post I Am Not Spock, whereas Leonard Nimoy reads it and talks about the fact that he realizes he had to admit that Spock was a part of him. And you talk about that issue he had. That's well talked about in the book. And that was actually, it's a very good book to listen to. and you want to learn more about Nimoy, that's a book to listen to. On to those that are still around. Let's do a warm welcome to Anthony D. Longus, American actor, fight director, and trainer who played Kova in 5 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Happy birthday to Sarah Mornell, actress who played Ensign Carson in Star Trek Deep Space Nine's 4th season episode Starship Down. Happy birthday to Jennifer Edwards, Lost Kyle in Star Trek Next Generation 5th season episode New Ground. Happy birthday to Ray Reinhardt, who played Vice Admiral Aaron in Star Trek Next Generation 1st season episode Conspiracy. And I think if we look towards Eric, he's not here, but that would be definitely one of the evil admirals.
Oh, major.
Happy birthday to
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I mean, it's not really his fault. He's possessed by an alien parasite, right? But terrifying.
Yeah.
For sure.
Happy birthday to Brenda Lee Strong from Oregon. Is the actress who played in the role of Rochelle in the Star Trek's Next Generation prison episode When the Bow Breaks. Happy birthday to Casey King, American actor. Sorry. Actor played Ichabod in Star Trek Picard's 1st season episode Stardust City Rag. And the last one on my list, the good birthday. Happy birthday to Jed Bush, Australian actor, model, and visual artist who plays Christine Chapel in Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Can't see what happens with that character and her interactions with Spock.
And
so
she
Paul,
can
who
sing.
On your list?
In that episode, Bohemian Rhapsody, man, can she sing. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. So, Paul, I think you have a few more.
Did you say Bohemian Rhapsody? I think you did.
I was thinking I had Queen on my brain.
It's your Flash Gordon fondness, man. That's what happened.
That's what it is. I meant so.
It's like, wait a minute. Did I just imagine that? Wait, hold the phone here. Wait a second. But that's great, man. So, yeah, she's incredible. I can't wait to see. I'm sorry. I love Strange New Worlds. That cast is amazing. I can't wait to see where they go. I'm super excited. And she's just great. She's couldn't agree more. Happy birthday more from me. I got a few more here and a couple that I think are just lovely, lovely features of the Picard series. The franchise. First of all, from the most recent 3rd season and concluding season, we think, of Star Trek Picard, give it up for Amanda Plummer, legendary daughter of Christopher Plummer, the actress who played the antagonist Vadic in that 3rd season. Pretty damn scary, and she definitely dominated the screen whenever she was on. Keeping smoking alive in the far, far future of villainous antagonists, without question. But man, it's just Amanda Plummer has a way of delivering dialogue. You just kind of have to hold your breath and wait until she's done, right? Because you just don't. It's a very suspenseful way that she delivers her dialogue, which is so impressive and cool. But Amanda Plummer is a legend. You know, she's been in so many great, I mean, she's got quite a legacy from her father, of course, but she's been in tons and tons of just amazing films. Most recently, probably that a lot of folks, well, I say recently, they're within, you know, but memorably, I should say. She was in the great movie, The Fisher King, with Robin Williams and Jeff Bridges, but will probably be ever remembered as the lovely Honey Bunny from 1994's Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, where she robs the a diner or attempts to rob the diner until she runs afoul of Jules Winfield and his special wallet that can be identified with just a choice embroidered phrase. you just gotta love Honey Bunny, and you absolutely gotta love Amanda Plummer, the greatest. So cool and so beloved. Speaking of folks we beloved, and also talking Picard here, I'd like to say a huge happy birthday to Irish actress Orla Brady, who played a couple of different roles in terms of duality on Picard. She played Laris and also Talin. So a couple of different characters on there. I think most of us, though, remember her for her work as Laris on there, which I think just really seemed to be an anchor for Picard in that future area there. But what a great character. I kind of feel like, you know, I hate to go off rails too much, but I feel like she was extremely underutilized, was just very enchanting and very likable character, very, you know, to hold your own in a bunch of scenes with Patrick Stewart. No easy feat. And Orla Brady did that easily, or really just captivating, fascinating to watch, really, really fun. Really would love to see, I don't know if we'll ever see more Picard. Who knows, you know, if we will or not. But, man, I wish we'd seen more of that character and that actress on that show. I thought she was just dynamite. I mean, really, really
good. And Paul, if you want to be a top fan on our Facebook page, it's very easy. Just go there and interact. Well, on her birthday, which I it was today or yesterday, I'm not sure which it was, but I put up her birthday post, and I've been having a lot of interesting conversations on our Facebook page with our fans. And one of the things that keeps coming up repeatedly amongst our fans is the fact that season three, the fans that I've been talking with in reference to her, don't like the way they ended Picard season three with Picard stranding her at the diner or where she was supposed to meet Picard somewhere. And Picard took off with Beverly and never met her at their designated meeting place. And a lot of fans feel that that was really a snub to a great character. And they felt that they should have shown him meeting with her rather than going with Beverly. And again, it's just a personal preference, but a lot of fans agree with you that they missed that opportunity on Picard because they just loved her character and the way she played it. So if you feel that way, you're not alone. A lot of our fans on our Facebook page have expressed that same feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of stuff about Picard that, you know, for me, I mean, I love the third season. There was a lot of stuff on the show that sometimes didn't play for me. Orla Brady was not one of them. I think every scene she had was just great. Super talented. Definitely somebody I would recommend following her career because I think she's got astonishing things in the future. I'm sure that while maybe the folks on the show didn't know what to do with her, I suspect there's quite a few directors in Hollywood or stage producers, if you will, because I think she certainly comes across as somebody with you know, some theatrical chops and some theatrical training for sure. But I would love to see what she's going to do next. Somebody's going to snap her up and start giving her just phenomenal work. So big fans of yours, Orla Brady. And lastly for me, one more birthday and then we'll pass it over, but saying hello to Caesar Belli. Okay. Who is Caesar Belli? Well, Caesar Belli played one of the young children named Steve O'Connell. I believe the oldest of them, if I'm not mistaken, in the original series episode And the Children Shall Lead. And the reason I mentioned that is because Cesar Belli was the son of a famous trial lawyer and actor sometimes, Melvin Belli, who played the evil angel in that episode, Gorgon. In that episode. So kind of a little deal. Hey, can you maybe get a part for my son in here? That would be super great. So I'm sure that would be the kind of thing that, you know, Melvin Belli was referred to as the king of torts by insurance companies. He was quite a, memorable trial lawyer, if you will. And I'm sure he had no problem convincing, yeah, let's go ahead and get my son a role there. So, but made him part of the Star Trek firmament forever. So, Cesar Belli, happy birthday, and that's it for my list of birthdays this week. I'm going to pass it over to Jim. I'm very envious of a couple of the names on your list, Jim.
I've got some good ones. I want to start off with what I think is one of the best additions to Star Trek Discovery, and in my opinion, really a top engineer, I think. We want to say happy birthday to Tig Notaro, the American stand-up comic writer, radio contributor, and actress who plays Jet Reno on Star Trek Discovery. And I got to say, I love her banter between her and Stamets. It kind of reminds me of the Spock-McCoy banter on TOS. In fact, I just watched the episode just today where it was at season 3, episode 1, or no, it was episode 2, when Discovery crashes on the planet and Jet Reno's in a wheelchair and Stamets is all cut up and he's got to crawl through the Jeffrey tubes and she calls him Bobcat. And it's a hilarious scene. So happy birthday. I also want to say happy birthday to Bonnie Gordon. Bonnie Gordon is the actress who does the voice of the ship computer, the USS Protostar on Star Trek Prodigy. She's also been on this podcast before. So happy birthday to Bonnie Gordon. She's awesome. She's fun. She's great. Happy birthday. And now we're going to move on to some Klingons because I always save the Klingons for last. We want to say kapla to Del Yunt, who played Tilka in Star Trek Deep Space Nine's fourth season episode, The Sons of Moog. And I saved the biggest and the bestest, the big wide-eyed last. We want
yes,
to say,
you did.
to Robert O'Reilly, the one, the only Gowron on Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek The Next Generation. And I think he's most remembered for the big eyes and the way he says, Duras.
Duras.
You just never forget the way he says that. And Robert O'Reilly brought this character to life and made him memorable. So happy birthday to Robert O'Reilly. And that wraps up our Star Trek birthdays. And we're going to move into some Star Trek news. And Paul, you've got our first news story, and it's a rather interesting one.
Well, if you think we have time, I'm ready to go, buddy. So let's
do it. I want to get this one in.
I am going to, in a non-stereotypical way, grab myself a wonderful glass of Rhone wine and a baguette as I tell you that Star Trek Prodigy, shocker, 20-episode season 2 is now streaming in France. That's right. You must travel over there to see it because on Christmas Day of last year, Christmas, fans of Prodigy, Star Trek Prodigy, were treated to the first season officially streaming on the show's new home, Netflix. And a friend of the show, writer and executive producer Aaron Walke, and series creators Kevin and Dan Hegeman, Oregon natives, just throwing that in there, already began to fan the speculation flames when it came to viewers that could expect from a second season. But then something very unexpected happened. All 20 episodes, boom, from season 2, ended up available this weekend on French national broadcaster France Télévisions in an extended look at the second season opener from August. The former crew of the USS Protostar, including Dal, Roktok, Zero, Jankumpag, and Murph, is now a warrant officer in training, reunited for an internship under the command of Admiral Janeway, Kate Mulgrew. Getting started, the five are introduced to Robert Picardo's The Doctor. Yeah, from our real-life days when Star Trek Voyager was still on our screens. Aboard Janeway's new ship, they learned their next mission. Observe a wormhole they are all too familiar with. Oh, and yes, that is Voyager A. But what does the future hold for the series? There is no definitive end. Are we making a season 3? No, but we can make season 3? Yes. I think a lot of this has to do with the type of appetite there is for Prodigy, explained Dan Hegeman. At the end of episode 40, there's a nice wrap-up, no matter what the future might hold. But that doesn't mean the series doesn't keep open the door to new storyline possibilities like season 1.
Yes, and that answers a question that we had when we had him on the show. And are they going to drop Prodigy a few at a time or all at once? There's your answer. They dropped it all at once. That's going to make it hard for us on the podcast because we're only going to do an episode a week, so we're going to just plug along talking about Prodigy. But, yeah, I just wanted to get that story out because that just dropped, and it's all over the Internet. Prodigy, Prodigy, Prodigy. So just be patient. It's coming. It's on the way. So that wraps up our show. I want to say thank you so much to Dr. Paul Clark, Dr. Migo, for hanging out and talking with us, obviously. Thank you to Ray for giving us a call. And thank you so much to our very own Charles for hanging out and truck talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you. It's always fun.
And, of course, thank you to our very own toy guy, Paul, for hanging out with us and truck talking. Paul?
The evening flew by. I can't believe it is the end of the show already. But nice to have that guest. That was awesome. Really, really fun.
Now, next Thursday, Star Trek Discovery is back for its fifth and final season. We, however, will not be talking about that episode until the following week. But what we are going to do next week is we're going to take a look back at the first four seasons of Discovery, and we're going to talk about Discovery, what we'd like to see in season five, and we're just going to have some fun reliving Discovery and getting primed to talk about season five, episode one, the following week. So that'll be next week, same bat time, same bat channel. And yes, Eric will be back with us, and hopefully David will be back. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
And prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hello. You have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.